Hello, everybody. Welcome into Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. Just like the big voice guy said, it's the afternoon. This show can be in the mornings. It's okay. It doesn't matter. It's on a Saturday. That's the name of the show. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Everything is great. I know everything is great because we're not going to try to spend the next 2 hours justifying what just happened to the Jayhawks. You may have heard that here, right here on 810, and God bless you if you listened to all of it. Got a little better towards the end, I suppose. But that is absolutely not what we're going to be talking about over the next 2 hours here on 810. Again, I'm Josh Briscoe. Mike DiMaggio's hitting all the buttons. And at 5 o'clock, we'll talk to Ryan Tracy of Locked On Chiefs, RGR Football. Does some great work covering the Chiefs. And generally today, we're talking about Chiefs-Lions coming up tomorrow. This is not a pregame show, but it might as well be. This show isn't a pregame show. This is a pregaming show. So crack open a Saturday afternoon brew of your choice, and let's start pregaming. Like, yeah, the game's in Detroit, so you can just tailgate. You can tailgate here with us. You can tailgate on the radio is what we're going to do today. Because I really want to talk about what's going to be happening tomorrow, and also just about some things that I think we've learned throughout these first 3 weeks of this Chiefs season. It's been genuinely really interesting, and it's hard to be anything other than excited for Chiefs football right now because Patrick Mahomes plays quarterback. So that's rad. Like that much we're all on the same page on. But I would say that it makes everything else we're talking about sometimes more important and sometimes less important. Things like injuries across the offensive line, to me, get less important when Patrick Mahomes is playing quarterback for your football team because he makes problems like that disappear. Cam Irving had a couple of non-ideal plays on last Sunday, but for the most part, he stepped in. The offensive line played well. Everything there was fine by me. Does that happen if you're blocking for a less mobile, less exceptional quarterback? Almost certainly not. And in some ways, Patrick Mahomes being this team's quarterback and altogether, really, the ceiling of this team altogether this season makes things like what's happening on the defensive side of the football this year all that much more interesting and more important because you're not just looking at that defense and saying, man, I hope they can help our team win a playoff game or two. You can look at this team as a whole and say Super Bowl. And it's week three, and we're talking about that. Like I don't know if that's ever been the case in my lifetime. If ever, it was last year because Mahomes started off so hot in his first year as a starter. But even then, it was, well, when does the other shoe drop? When does he come back down to earth? What is happening here? What are teams going to figure out? The whole, like, film on Mahomes regression thing, that's a complete non-starter in my mind at this point. And so, I don't even know if there's a way to say something new about Patrick Mahomes. I tried. If you've listened to Almost Entirely Sports at all recently, you'll know. I tried to put Mahomes into context by showing what he's done in this first portion of his career as opposed to like the entire career of Troy Aikman, and then Troy Aikman got mad online about it. And so I'm not going the Hall of Fame quarterback comparison route at this point. I don't feel the need to engage in every conversation that's had on a national media outlet whenever they say, oh, is Mahomes going to be the greatest of all time? That's legitimately a thing that was happening, I think, on some ESPN show this week. Saying, well, is he going to be the greatest that we've ever seen at this position? I don't care what they landed on in that conversation. The fact that that conversation happened for this dude, 20 regular season games into his NFL career, 22 games overall, that gives you a lot of information about how exceptional the start of his career has been. So I don't know I can't look away. I don't want to look away from what this offense is doing, but I don't know if I even like have something else to say that I haven't already said 45 times over. For me, that particular drum that I'm constantly banging might be about throwing the ball instead of running the ball, maybe offense in the second half versus in the first half. I mean, we can do some of that at some point today. We're here for 2 hours. We probably will do that at some point today. But for me, I think the actually most interesting individual thing that this team has to offer at this point is on the defensive side of the ball, at least from a conversational standpoint and a, hey, where does it go from here standpoint? Because this whole offseason, once you got done saying, no, Patrick Mahomes isn't going to regress, I don't care that teams have film on him, that's not how this works. Once you got past that point, whenever that was for you, for me, that was, you know, 12 seconds into the offseason, because probably about as long as it took for me to say that sentence out loud. From there on out, conversations were constantly had about the defense, and it was bringing in Frank Clark, and it was cutting Justin Houston and Eric Berry, and it was trading D. Ford, and it was bringing in Tyrann Mathieu and drafting Juan Thornhill, and all of these changes that happened on the personnel side, which were all followed by bringing in Steve Spagnuolo to be the team's new defensive coordinator. Well, we had this whole offseason of expectations and questions and how long does it take before you're able to evaluate this and what's fair to expect and what do the Chiefs need here? And I think we've started to get a lot of those answers maybe more quickly than I expected. And tomorrow is going to be another opportunity to maybe have some fears settled. Let's go back to last offseason, not this most recent one, but going into Mahomes' first year as a starter, looking at that defense. I distinctly remember having a couple of shows at night here on 810, some like Chiefs special. Then we did Chief Concerns with the lasers. It was great. Best imaging we've ever made for a show. But we were doing like training camp specific shows and all of that. And I vividly remember having these conversations about David Amerson and Orlando Scandrick. Going, I don't know, guys. If this is your plan to solve this, I question your plan. And I was relatively optimistic about Anthony Hitchens while also being extremely pessimistic about what Bob Sutton is planning on doing here. David Amerson didn't even ultimately make the team. Orlando Scandrick ended up getting benched for Tre'Mon Smith, who is now returning kicks for the Packers, because Tre'Varius Ward was also starting in that same game. He ended up keeping the job. But he starts that game, Tre'Mon Smith does, with the injury, and maybe you would say that Tre'Varius Ward replaced Orlando Scandrick. Doesn't matter. Orlando Scandrick didn't start over Tre'Mon Smith in that game. And over the course of the season, I just felt like you kept seeing the problems in the secondary that were made even more exaggerated by the safety play. The linebacker situation was a nightmare, but as we all got smarter there, it became more and more evident that it wasn't about the guys playing those spots quite as much as it was the guy who was telling them how to play those spots. You saw Anthony Hitchens get visibly slower last year in his first season as a Chief, not because, you know, his knees fused together or something, but because he was sitting there processing too much before he could react. I thought that was a problem throughout the entire group of linebackers last season. But all of our to land this particular plane, the reason I'm talking about last year is because I felt like defensively, all of the preseason concerns, off-season concerns, training camp concerns, all those things that I couldn't stop pointing at and saying, hey, does anybody else see this? Hello? It's like whenever there's an uncovered gunner on a punt that's just like standing there looking at the punter like, hey, can we fake this? Literally no one is in front of me for 25 yards. Can we? Hey, over here. I felt like I was doing that for so much stuff last offseason that ended up being a pretty significant problem, obviously. This offseason, I've felt like I was doing that with the group of corners, and a lot of the other problems went away, mercifully, because of the hiring of Spagnuolo over Bob Sutton. And we're going to talk more about what Spagnuolo is doing and what he hasn't done yet, because I think that's also a really interesting kind of appetizer for the game tomorrow, because I think we're going to keep seeing more of it. But this season, with fewer problems, I still found myself just pointing at this group of corners, going, hey guys, look at the writing on the wall at the moment. Bashaud Breeland gets brought in, and he's, you know, he could be kind of a coin flip. I thought he had a relatively high ceiling, but just, I mean, it's a one-year prove-it deal for a guy. That's a little bit concerning for essentially at least your number one outside corner. Kendall Fuller, who was this team's best cornerback last year, Steve Spagnuolo says is going to play solely in the slot this year, which he's been doing so far. And listen, that's 70 to 80% of a guy's snaps, of a defense's snaps. But last year, Fuller was playing outside whenever he wasn't in the slot, and now whenever he's not in the slot, he's not on the field. And then that's Charvarius Ward, a guy who I do think we saw get better over the course of last season, but there's just a ton of unknowns there. Well, the difference for me looking at this defense this season as opposed to last is that as the season has gotten going, I think we're starting to see answers. And not just like suggested answers, but actual reasonable ones. Actual things that come together in a way that make you go, oh, I see what they're attempting to work with here. I see how this is changing for the better. In a way that's like meaningful and obvious. We didn't see that happening last year. And this year, I think in three games, you've got more than a quarter of the plan visible, and less than a quarter of the season. The hesitation that you would see from the linebackers seems to have gone away. The coverage from the linebackers has been really exceptional, which I didn't expect. I don't ever expect linebackers to be excellent in coverage, because it's a really hard job that they have there. The safeties have stabilized so much in the back of the defense. And the defensive line, at least last week, you started seeing some of that production come together. Even if you go, well, that didn't come from Frank Clark. Was he worth the money? Which we'll talk about here in a minute. The corners, though, being my biggest concern coming into this season, I'm also starting to feel better about. And we've talked about this on Almost Entirely Sports some this week, and we talked about this in the post-game show last Sunday, and tomorrow it'll be me and Brad Porter again breaking down the game as soon as it ends. We'll have audio live from Detroit and all of that. But what I feel like we saw against Baltimore, not against a precise quarterback, against an extremely dangerous one, but not a precise quarterback, fair enough, I suppose. But we have seen that group of corners doing their job, essentially. What I thought we saw last week, because there were bad plays in that fourth quarter, because the Ravens started making things a little bit close when it seemed like that shouldn't have been a game that got close in the way that it did. What we saw against Baltimore, though, were some bad plays in a good game. What we saw for the larger chunk of last season in pass coverage at every level were occasional good plays in a nightmarish season. So maybe if the Ravens complete all of those bombs that weren't bombs, the passes that Lamar Jackson just threw straight up into the air, all of the oh God, this can't possibly work for them. If all the ones that did go the Ravens' favor, plus a couple more, did go in their favor, maybe that all comes together. So you know what? That game wasn't good enough. But man, through three games, whenever you look at the way that Gardner Minshew and Derek Carr get rid of the football, at the pace that they do with the short amount of time that they do, that's a really tough ask for that secondary. And I think they were fine there. And then against Baltimore, you've got to make those plays on 50-50 balls that really shouldn't have even been 50-50 balls, but that's okay. Like, that's doable. You can actually work with that. And so I'm a little bit optimistic about how this defense is coming together, and you know that I'm overwhelmingly optimistic about this offense being an absolute rocket ship, just going to explore deep space where no man has been before, no offense has been before. Competent defensive play will very likely win this team a Super Bowl. Or at least not get in the way of a Super Bowl. Good defensive play makes them the prohibitive favorite. Although the Patriots right now are giving good offensive play and excellent defense. Certainly, if the Chiefs could provide some excellent defense for a playoff run, I hesitate to even say how confident I would be in January and then ultimately February. I genuinely believe that that is well within the achievable scope of what this team can do, with absolutely no hesitation. The Spagnuolo-based question that I alluded to earlier is just, how far can that development go? And so that goes back to, you know, right now I think that they're at a better point than they were at any point in the last two seasons, at least. I think that they are at a competent place right now, and competent will win the AFC West and very likely the one seed. The freaking Patriots, man. The Patriots play. They have an XFL a division around them. Like, their divisional rivals are XFL opponents. The Bills are undefeated. Shut up. Stop it. If they lose to the Bills this weekend, I will change my tone. But they're not going to lose to the Bills this weekend because they're the Patriots and they're the Bills. That division is, seriously, two XFL teams, the Dolphins and the Jets. And the pride of that division from a non-Patriots perspective is Josh Allen. Like, who's fine, but I don't know. What did Wisconsin wear today? Mike DiMaggio's hitting the buttons. Do you have the TV up in there doing the Northwestern Wisconsin highlights?
No, I got Virginia Notre Dame. But I did see those uniforms earlier. They're awful.
I love a throwback. I'm all about even some uniform creativity. Wearing, like, nude-colored pants,
they're kind of reminiscent of those Packers throwbacks.
Yeah, but even the Packers ones, I never had the moment of, wait a second, is that entire team playing football naked? You know what they look like? Those Wisconsin, wherever you are right now, unless you're driving, which I think it's still raining. Yeah, it's not torrential anymore. You can drive in this. Don't text and drive in the rain. You know, text and drive whenever it's dry or drive in the rain. Wherever you are right now, Google Wisconsin uniforms. I don't know. What do you start today?
Today.
You'll find them. It is straight up these flesh-colored bottoms and these really horrible, blocky red jerseys. They went out there playing like Winnie the Pooh today. Red t-shirt, nothing else. Just Winnie the Poohin'.
truly a upsetting look. I guess Northwestern wore the same style, but not nearly as horrendous. I'm guessing that this is a throwback to, like, 1907.
What was the final score, like 13-10?
I didn't see it, but I imagine that it probably was. You think, come on, there's no way that Wisconsin, neither of these teams broke 20 points, right? All right, fine. We're going to go ahead and take a Chiefs break and find out if Wisconsin scored more than 20 points today. And, whoa, 24-15. Barn burner.
I'm guessing the over hit in that game.
Had to. They crushed the over. Wisconsin hit the over by themselves. Okay, so... wait, why does this say... okay, never mind. So Wisconsin Northwestern took the field Saturday in Madison wearing alternate uniforms inspired by each team's retro styles. Both alternate looks by Under Armour are simple and have the school's classic color schemes. UW's written on the front of the badge uniforms.
That explains it right there, Under Armour.
This is a nightmare, Under Armour. Like, this isn't... they're not even real. They're faux-backs. They're not even real throwbacks. Like, these are fake throwbacks?
Somebody got paid to design those.
I'm so confused. Why do they do this? Just the big NU and UW on the front of the jersey. Oh, God.
Hey, we're talking about it.
I mean, we are. That's true. Did you see the new Suns? People listening who listen to me regularly know that I'm a Suns fan, and that sucks on its own. Did you see the new jerseys that they put out?
I have not.
They are all orange, which is not ideal, but fine. But on the front, it's just the player's number, and then it's like their logo. It's just like the Sunburst logo, which is also almost all orange. It's a bad look, man.
It looks like a summer league jersey or something.
It looks very much. Someone said it looked like a WNBA jersey, which I think is probably even more accurate. But yeah, it does look like it looks like a G League jersey, whatever. It looks like Josh Jackson should be wearing it somewhere. It looks like a jersey that Josh Jackson can be not.
Hey, he'll be wearing
basketball
that in the G League.
That's what I'm saying. So somewhere, no, he won't because he's Memphis. With Memphis now. But it's still, my stupid Suns drafted him anyway. These are horrible uniforms. Somebody said Wisconsin's having Jake from State Farm Uniform Day, and that is exactly what they look like, except somehow worse. Yeah, it's really bad. I guess it gives us an excuse to take a commercial break. That seems reasonable. I've got a larger scale Steve Spagnuolo discussion that I'd like to have at some point. Also, I don't know, it's Saturday and it's weird. If you want to call in and talk about the Chiefs or maybe bad uniforms, you can call in this next segment, 913-3810-810. I have personally unlocked the phone, so you are invited. If you feel the need, or you can text the show. I'll read texts. I'm going to keep an eye on those also at 913-912-4810 if that's more your game. We'll hear from you whenever you come back, or you won't text or call in, and that's fine, and I'll talk about Steve Spagnuolo. We'll do one of those things next year on Sports Saturday. Welcome back into Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. Josh Briscoe, Mike DiMaggio hitting all the buttons. Talk to Ryan Tracy. I've locked on Chiefs here in about 40 minutes. This is me doing it, like, for the second consecutive segment. I'm doing, like, a visual, like, hey, did you see this thing? On the radio, so forgive me. Former almost entirely sports show intern Tucker Franklin, who's at @TheReal_TuckerF on Twitter if you want to see this picture, just, quote, tweeted a picture of the current state of the... Of the artificial football field at Northwest Missouri State. There are air bubbles under the field right now. There's so much rain. I'm not showing DiMaggio as if I'm one of the girls on Deal or No Deal. I'm holding up my laptop like one of those cases. I just opened it up to reveal. There's so much rain around the field that somehow air bubbles have popped up like underneath the turf. And like there's straight up. I mean, it looks like there's a pitcher's mound every 10 yards down the entire sideline. And it's
be like playing in Oakland.
Right. I mean, this is just a new, I guess this is just a new challenge for like off-roading football. It's really strange. It looks like an NFL street, like, field. I guess field would have been the only word to use there. It's really odd, and again, I have spent a section of a radio segment talking about something that I saw on Twitter. So, you know, I probably deserve that. Although Tucker also tweeted, this is by design. It happened a lot last year, but turned out fine. It's to increase... Whoa! How about this? How about this science? It's to increase drainage and downflow of water. That's also strange and weird. Okay, well, the more you know. You can text the show if you want, 913-912-4810. I got through an entire commercial break without successfully opening my ability to read that, so I'm not going to read any at this moment. But if you want to text the show, 913-912-4810. We'll keep an eye on them as we go. The real thing here today, other than bad uniforms and mounds under football fields, is the Chiefs and Lions game tomorrow. I'm genuinely excited for that game because I think we're going to get kind of the next step of what Steve Spagnuolo is attempting to do with this defense and sort of with this defense's evolving identity, I guess, if you will. I think we've started to see this sort of by degrees, so I'm really genuinely excited to see how it evolves over the next few weeks. Spagnuolo is bringing more in terms of functional creativity. And it happens in a way that I believe... The best logic for this, I think, actually came from Rudy Salazar on an AES a couple weeks ago that I'll tell you in a second. But I believe that what Spags is doing is making things easier for his players and more difficult for opposing offenses. You say, well, how does that happen? I'll tell you Rudy's theory that I have now stolen and appropriated as my own theory because I like this theory. Whenever you're left doing, also run this by Ryan Tracy in a little bit, 30 minutes, he can tell me if I'm an idiot, or really if Rudy's an idiot. That's the good thing about appropriating someone else's theory on something and then continually giving them credit. If eventually someone comes in and says, that's stupid and here's why, it's not really your fault, it's Rudy's fault. So I have a defense mechanism in here now. But what Rudy suggested that I like a lot is, obviously, look at last year, Bob Sutton had his players doing a lot of calculations as a snap happened, where everyone's running these processes of, if the running back goes this way, then I go this way, and if the quarterback goes this way, I go this way, and if someone comes through here, then I go here. And it was so much of that that even professionals who are good at understanding things that way have a really hard time because they're going up against other professionals that are doing the opposite, that are just trying to figure out, how can I ruin this guy's whole day here? What can I show them that makes them act in another way so I can do this thing? And I think that puts your players in such an unenviable position. And in a position to fail, honestly. And so I think Spagnuolo has countered that. And then also is showing opposing offenses more variety in what this defense can do. So the way that Rudy boiled it down was to suggest that with fewer things for each guy to worry about on each play, that makes things simpler. But how does it get more effective? Well, get more effective if you're having those guys do a wider variety of things in the play call. So it's not, hey, Anthony Hitchens, check these three boxes and then act. It's, hey, on this play, you are either blitzing or playing the zone or covering the running back or whatever. Dan Sorensen can be on the field either playing close to the line of scrimmage in zone coverage or covering a tight end or blitzing. Seeing Dan Sorensen close to the line of scrimmage isn't really telling the offense anything, but Dan Sorensen doesn't have to stand there and then say, okay, which of these three things am I doing? I don't know yet. Where the objective is clear to these guys, but there's a wider variety of what those objectives could possibly be in each play call. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense. Where there's more that each player can be doing, but they know factually which thing they're doing in a given play. I like that. I like that understanding of this a lot. Because, first of all, it makes me happy because I tend to believe, or what I want to believe, that the Chiefs are doing good, smart things, because I like it when the Chiefs are good. But that also works for me because I think we're seeing that play out. You've seen those linebackers all be really good in coverage. You've seen blitzes come from safeties and corners and certainly linebackers. You've seen creativity. Like, you can go back and watch Emmanuel Ogba's solo sack from the game against the Ravens. That's something that opens up whenever Frank Clark is demanding attention and guys are crossing paths and all these stunts and stuff that are happening across the defensive line where it's not just 1v1v1v2 because that's what Frank Clark is usually dealing with. He's being paid a lot of attention to. It's not just beat the guy in front of you and see what happens, because that just doesn't really work in the NFL at this point. There's too much other stuff going on. Like, you know, you go play, you play backyard football, street football, whatever, as a kid. I actually shouldn't say this because I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to say you're not really ever, like, calling a zone defense whenever you're playing football in the yard at age 12. And for me, that's not actually true. But I imagine most people weren't trying to teach zone defenses very rudimentary zone defenses, but at least some amount of zone defenses to other kids in the backyard. Usually meant I had to run less, which I was way into. Okay, I got up here, guys. I got this. I got the underneath here. Perfect. That's great. My feet will be right here or maybe three steps that way. Thank you for your concern. You, fast one, cover it, that fast one, I'll be over here. Also, most of the kids that in my neighborhood that I grew up in were all younger than me, which was great because I have a whole, like, all-time quarterback. Not all-time quarterback thing, but, like, clearly I'm a quarterback. And so I got to feel fast at age, 15, because I was, like, hurdling 7-year-olds. That might be an exaggeration, but I'm not going to tell you if it was an exaggeration or not, because either way, it's pretty funny. But I know that the Bob Sutton sort of philosophy was a lot of that, right? I guess I shouldn't say I know that. From what I understand, having watched Bob Sutton's football games for several years and then heard from a handful of players, especially after Sutton had been relieved of his duties, it seems like there was a lot of either you're doing calculus after the snap, or it's just like, Justin Houston, get him. It's like, okay, well, that's not really a plan. That's just kind of hut, and then everyone starts running. And the NFL is just too complicated for that at this point, man. It's just too complicated. You can't get away with stuff like that in 2019. And so the thing I'm looking for against Detroit tomorrow is to see if Spagnuolo continues to do more of sort of that almost randomization of what each player is doing, to see if there is a wider variety of of things that each player does over the course of a given game. I want to see if there are more secondary blitzes coming to go get Matt Stafford, who's not going to run away from you like Lamar Jackson did. Your fear has to be that he's, you know, he's going to be accurate downfield. And if you blow it there, you're going to be in trouble. But I want to see if they get a little more risky about what can get home against a quarterback who's not going to run away. And frankly, even in weeks one and two against a quarterback who is planning on getting rid of the ball extremely quickly. Tom Brady is probably going to fall in that other group, you know, where Gardner Minshew and Derek Carr were getting rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds. Brady will also do that. He's just better at it than everybody in a way that's obviously deeply frustrating. But I think Stafford's going to try to make some more things happen. And so while that is happening from Stafford's perspective, what kind of risks will Spagnuolo be willing to take? What envelope will he be willing to push? And specifically on the defensive line, because there's been a lot of discussion about Frank Clark, right? A lot of talk about, well, is he doing enough? Is he actually producing at a rate that is valid to justify his contract? All of that. Eventually, I think you can get to a point where you say, hey, is he having the level of production that they're paying him for? But at this point, whenever you see the defensive line getting a little more diverse in its attacks, I think you have to at least consider the idea that the defensive line as a unit having success is at least partially Frank Clark related. Where if he is getting more attention paid to him on a sack that Emmanuel Ogba gets, that doesn't show up as a Frank Clark sack, but it shows up as a Frank Clark effect. And so, listen, I would love for Frank Clark to be able to beat double teams and a scheming disadvantage because it's not really his opportunity in that moment and still get the sack. I would love that. That'll probably happen a couple of times where you just go, oh, God, that's what they paid him for. But at this point, I do think that we're relatively early on in the baking process of what Spagnuolo is attempting to cook up here in this defense. So I think it's really interesting. 913-912-4810 if you want to text in. Someone texted in to say one of the funniest things I've heard is when you compare the Jets and Dolphins to XFL teams. No, just to slightly correct you, texter, I didn't compare them to XFL teams. I said they are XFL teams. They literally should be. I don't... Every time... Also, I just watched Baylor just botch an extra point. That is one fun thing about doing the show at this time is like there is just college football on the two TVs in front of me, and the amount of times that I've seen something that has made me like cringe away from the microphone is brutal. Like, this happens watching NFL games with like Mitch Trubisky and Case Keenum or whatever. It's like, oh God, people, like, I used to watch this and like, oh, this is fine. If I could just watch Patrick Mahomes play Aaron Rodgers every week, I'd be so good with that. I said this on, I don't know where. I don't remember. I say too many things in too many different places. Somewhere I said that if the NFL wanted to work on a, wanted to collectively bargain a deal where Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes would just be all-time quarterbacks for every single NFL team, I would at least be willing to hear them out. Like, I don't want Mahomes to get hurt, you know, playing for someone else, some other team. Maybe there's just like a straight up yellow jersey rule. You just cannot touch these quarterbacks. Or maybe Mahomes and Rodgers just like always get prime time every week. That'd be good because then we could just watch Red Zone all day. And the red zone will make you forget that Case Keenum is playing quarterback because it's just, I mean, just heroin. The Red Zone channel is just absolute heroin. It's wonderful. The Red Zone channel, not heroin.
I don't know. The primetime games have been pretty solid so far this year.
There have been some real...
Did you see that Bears-Redskins game?
Yeah,
man?
That one, the fact that that is the same sport as the one that Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes plays is just brutal. Monday night this week, I think, is Bengals-Steelers.
Right here on Sports Radio 810. You can listen. You can listen to that game.
It is
Bengals
Steelers, right?
Yeah, it is.
Why
yeah.
can't they change that?
They can't. They can't flex Monday night games. I don't know. I mean, that just not. It wasn't a part of the.
You don't
deal
even have
ESPN.
To flex anything up there. Just flex that one down.
Right. We can. Hey, can we just not have Monday night football this week, just so we don't have to consider possibly being forced to watch Steelers Bengals? You know, maybe I'll do. Maybe I'll listen to that game on Sports Radio 810 while doing something better on Monday. Maybe I'll play a little Pokemon at home with the radio broadcast turned up. I could do that. That sounds better than being forced to watch these two teams. I don't know. At that point, maybe the entire city will be underwater. We won't have to worry about it. Maybe the Chiefs can just. The Chiefs can just stay in Detroit this week while we all drown here, and we'll have bigger problems on our hands. Because it's just going to keep raining like this for the next, like, month, I think. Anyway.
I don't mind it.
I don't either.
As long as it's not snow.
Here's the you know how desperate I am right now. If it was snow, it would be better than what the last month has been. And really what the last, like, 3 months have been. Summer can go to hell. Summer can go back to hell. Or hell can go back to hell. I don't care. It's too damn hot. It's been too damn hot for too long. So I would just like it to be 60 degrees. I'd take 50. If you told me it was going to be 90 or 40, I'd take 40 for sure. I don't really want snow. But it would be better than heat stroke, which is what I've been suffering from consistently for months now. Someone else texted and said, Josh, love the show. Thank you, Texter. But said you and Curtis Seabolt could just have a show just talking about teams' uniforms. If that shows up on the schedule next weekend, I will cancel my plans, and we will come in and just Curtis and I will just talk about uniforms. I'll do some power rankings, and I would be thrilled to just do a uniform show. Maybe we don't need 2 full hours. Maybe one would do it. But either way, I would love that.
You need to put out some rankings.
Should I feel like NFL... Here's the thing. There's not that much variety in the NFL uniforms, even though that would be easy enough. I'm not doing baseball. NBA uniform... Maybe I do NBA uniform set rankings. So teams with their entire... Like, their entire... array of options in their wardrobe. Maybe I should start with the NFL. Maybe I need to stop screwing around and just do an NFL jersey power ranking. This brings me to another important conversation that I definitely was prepared to talk about today. I feel like every like couple of months, someone tweets out like a Chiefs like alternate mock-up, which I understand why, because right now the Chiefs have, for my entire life, really for the existence of the franchise back in the Texans days, they've had red uniforms and white uniforms with either white pants or red pants. And that's it. The most exciting thing they did throughout the 90s uniform-wise was all white in the early 2000s. In these last few years, they've done some all red, and people have lost their bleep. I understand that you would like to see the Chiefs have another uniform in their rotation, that most people would like to see that. I'm not opposed to it, but none of those mock-ups are ever good. They're just never good. Yellow can't happen. That doesn't work. Black is weird.
Black's the worst. Give me the yellow over the black.
I think I probably agree with you. The problem is the pant setup here for either of those. Red helmet, black jersey, black pants? No. White pants? No. Red pants?
No.
Mate, that would be the best of the three, I think. Because you're at least going red, black, red? Maybe? But the yellow is a nightmare because you're either going to go all yellow and that's you just look like a exploded highlighter, or you go... Because the red helmet is happening. The NFL still has their one helmet rule.
Which is dumb.
Like, oh, but we care about concussions. You don't. The NFL, we know you don't, and the helmet rule isn't helping. But if you're going red helmet, yellow jersey, red pants, Like, just Google Ronald McDonald. That's literally, I wasn't even thinking about that, but that's literally Ronald McDonald, big red hair, yellow vest, red pants, big red shoes, right? Is that not literally Ronald McDonald? Even if it looks okay as a uniform, I don't want to listen to people compare the Chiefs to Ronald McDonald. Also, amendment, Ronald McDonald is in a yellow jumpsuit. I don't know why I imagine Ronald McDonald in red pants, but no, never mind. It's all yellow. Also, has it been a minute since you've seen Ronald McDonald in anything?
A while.
I feel like McDonald's might have been like, hey, we're going to go ahead. Ronald McDonald House Charities, love it. Logo there, Ronald holding hands with a kid maybe. Don't think about it too much. Love it. Everything's great. I haven't seen much of, like, you know, they used to have the statue of Ronald, like, on the bench. We could, like, sit next to this stone clown or in the commercials or anything like that. I
feel like there's been a rise in people who are freaked out by clowns.
I think you're right. Like, even if you just Google Ronald McDonald, you start getting Pennywise from It pretty quickly. Did you see the two new It movies at any point? The second one just came out recently.
I haven't seen. I've seen the first one. Okay. I have yet to see the second one. I heard the first one's better.
It probably is. They're both very good, though. I really enjoyed the second one. I'm not really a horror movie person. First one was outstanding. Second one was very good. But I also am not, like, afraid of clowns. I don't...
The only thing that kind of freaks me out is, like, demon, like, possessive kind of stuff. Other than that, nothing really gets
me. Oh, interesting. All right, 913-912-4810. Text what you're afraid of. Not a joke. I'm going to also put out on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. I want to know your fears. What's your worst fear? Demon possessive stuff is interesting.
Number two is Wisconsin's jersey today.
That's good. That is actually three for me, behind water that I can't see the bottom of, and dying alone and unfulfilled. Just three kind of fun ones.
Oh, we're getting that deep?
Just sort of the three kind of like funny, kind of funniest, you know, most lighthearted fears. It's true for everybody, right? No? Good. It's Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. You know what else I'm afraid of? Not getting this commercial break done in time. So we're going to do that now. Whenever we come back, we'll read your texts and, I don't know. You talk about the Chiefs or clowns. We'll figure it out. Ryan Tracy is on with us at 5:00 here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810. Got a text about worst fear. My kid's waking me up at 3 a.m. is this texter's fear. Not my kid. I don't have any. The texter's kids. That does beg a follow-up question for me, though, which is just like, is that just being awoken at 3 a.m. because it means you're not sleeping anymore? Or is that like a little kid standing in the doorway, wake up, shadow, you just hear, you know, squeaking footsteps, kid turns the corner, everyone freezes, what's the kid about to say? And I feel like it's either like, I'm thirsty, or I barfed, or I'm here to claim your soul. And frankly, I think the last one would be better than the one right before it. Having to clean up child barf at 3 a.m. seems like a true living nightmare. It's Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe. Mike DiMaggio's hitting all the buttons. If you want to text the show, you can do it 913-912-4810. I did want to, like, slightly land the plane on the incredibly drawn-out Spagnuolo point and something specifically I'm looking forward to for tomorrow's game. He mentioned this on Thursday, I believe, out at Arrowhead. I was out there for, it would have been Thursday. He mentioned this. And I was out there for Chiefs availability. He's talking about finding still what this team does best, like finding its strengths still. And I think that that is clearly still a work in progress. And he mentioned that Bashaud Breeland is best out there whenever he's able to really get his hands on somebody. And that, you know, we've heard him talk about Tre'Davious Ward for a while, about him being comfortable in man but needing to figure out the zone. Well, you don't need to really make him play zone all the time. I asked him about this 2 weeks ago, where sometimes they're playing some split coverages where Ward would be in man on one side of the field and then Breeland would be in zone on the other. And he said that wasn't specific to Tre'Davious Ward, you know, in the second game of the season, which, you know, that's fine. I buy that. But I also would imagine that it's not ignoring the fact that Ward is more comfortable there. So with all of that playing a reasonable amount together, seeing what they do against the Lions will be really interesting, because he also talked about how the Lions are bringing out some pretty big physical receivers, where it's a little bit different than their challenges over the first 3 weeks of the season, with what they'll be facing tomorrow. And that, that challenge is maybe one of the things that I'm more kind of optimistic for tomorrow. I think the Chiefs are going to win the game and everything, but like specifically looking to seeing how this matchup plays out, if you're going to ask Tre'Davious Ward and Bashaud Breeland and Kendall Fuller, if you're going to dare those three guys to put their hands on your receiver, I think they're going to be happy to oblige. That largely plays into the strengths of those guys. So It feels right now like that's something that the Chiefs will be able to lean into their strengths just by countering the Lions' strengths. And so seeing that develop will be really interesting. We also heard Andy Reid talk earlier this week about Matt Patricia's defense and what he's able to bring together and all that. And it could all be coach speak, but I at least thought there was a little something interesting in the way that Reed talked about, you know, maybe you prepare for one thing from Patricia and then he shows you something else, and then the next play shows you something else, and the next play shows you the thing that you are actually preparing for. With all of that variety, I'm not saying that I want to see Patrick Mahomes in that spot, because I don't think he's going to solve it all. I absolutely do. I think that at this point, there's very little you could show Patrick Mahomes that would make him anything other than an extremely outstanding quarterback. But I'll at least be intrigued to see if the Lions do not just commit to that, but maybe turn it up another level. Because if you're going to try to make me buy the idea that you can rattle Mahomes, it's probably going to be from really selling out on the attempts to confuse him. And so if they try to do that, I'm excited to see what Mahomes' counter is. Also, the injuries from this week have all been pretty much the same. It really looks like at this point Damian Williams will not play. Definitely no games for Eric Fisher or Tyreek Hill, obviously. The fact that Tyreek Hill disappeared and this offense has still been this good in his absence is, like, totally bonkers to me. But it is also just totally the truth of the matter, which is also hilarious. But Cam Irving played pretty well on Sunday and in the week before as well. A couple of bad moments that you don't love, but ultimately it was a perfectly passable game. Maybe the least impactfully at this point, the running back room has been really good in Damian Williams' absence. That makes me, like, super optimistic about what they're going to be able to do on the ground, even whenever the ground game is of less importance, both for this team and for this era of football. And so all of that I find really, really interesting. And so obviously there's, you know, all these moving parts you can look for in the game on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to a bunch of it. And I know that Ryan Tracy of Locked On Chiefs is also looking forward to it. I'm trying to currently, DiMaggio and I are trying. We're currently having coach quarterback headset communication problems. Do you want me to just end the hour? Or are you going to play any fun music for the end? If you don't have the music load up, it's fine. We'll just end the hour. Well, now he's saying he has the music. But now it's too late, DiMaggio. You may now hear the music. We could have just gone to, it would have been fine. Now I know for a fact that we will take a break in about 50 seconds or so, I'd imagine. We will talk to Ryan Tracy whenever we make the rounds here. I want to run a lot of this by him. The idea that there is more for this defense to do over the course of the rest of the season, that there is growth to be had, and that there are things that this defense and that Steve Spagnuolo will continue to develop. I think that's the case, but if Ryan comes on and tells me that I'm a big stupid idiot and that, you know, everything I've believed for this last week or so is completely wrong, I'd at least like him to tell me that. Maybe I'll just hang up on him. I don't know. You can find out whenever you come back. Also, if you want to get your 10 cents in, 913-912-4810, you can text the show there. More Sports Saturday whenever we come back here on Sports Radio 810.